This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
Today I have with me
Russell Harris. I was born the 30th of May 1938.
I'm also known as Rusty.
Rusty.
And I'm Stuart Burks. You've been involved, or you were involved in sports radio broadcasting for a very long time, weren't you?
Yes, it goes back to 1976.
Yes.
And then I had a career in radio for just on 40 years, so on the sports side.
So to about 2016?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, okay. So only recently stopped, basically.
Yes, it was, and that was non-stop.
So you were almost 80 by the time that you stopped?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Was it very energetic? Did you have to be very fit to do sports?
No, to be honest, no.
Okay.
You've got to look after your voice. That's key.
Yeah.
And you've got to be committed to the job, because throughout that time I was Saturdays.
Yes.
Every Saturday. That was the commitment.
Okay.
And even if you were in later years, with the technology, if you're out of town, if I was out of town, I could still do it.
Yeah.
So, but it was a great experience. Well, because
was that because it was using phone, or was it a connection? Or
sometimes it was through lines, and then of
when
course
you say lines,
the,
you mean phone line?
Phone lines with a technician.
Yes.
With a radio technician who set it up.
Okay.
And then the biggest change really was the cell phone. When that came along in the 1980s, the first one, it was very
big. Oh, you were using the really early cell phones?
Yeah. Not many people had them.
No, I know.
It was called the brick, and that was the best description of it ever. But that within its capabilities, revolutionised broadcasting. Because the network, of course, was very limited. Mm. But that means if you could get a signal, that you could broadcast from anywhere.
And the quality was good?
Quality was acceptable.
Okay, yeah.
And then into the 90s, the technology got better and better and better.
Yeah.
And the more towers went up, the signal got stronger. And
the phones got smaller,
smaller.
When you said the brick, I recall someone who had one of those phones in the late 80s, and it was just about the size of a brick.
It was.
Not the thing. And then they got very small, you could just fit one in a pocket, and now they got bigger and bigger and more features in them.
The brick, there weren't a lot of people had them.
Yes.
And, I can remember one very well-known broadcaster, I won't say who it was, but at an airport, I remember meeting him at Palmerston North Airport, and he was dialing up and on the phone, pretending he was talking to someone, people took notice of him. He never completed the number.
Yes. I see, it could be a good way if you're in a conference and it's a very boring speaker, you just stick your phone to your ear and rush out.
Yes.
Everyone thinks you've got a good reason for leaving. Yeah. Okay, well, can we go back then? You were in your 30s when you started. So how did you get in? You were trained for it?
No training. Absolutely. In my 40 years, I had probably a little more than halfway through, I finally got invited to a training school in Wellington.
Okay.
And it was over 3 days.
Yeah.
and that was the only training. Although I must say that I was Radio New Zealand, that they did checks on air checks that you weren't aware of.
Yeah.
You had occasionally an interview with someone from head office that you recorded something and he went through it saying, you know, I remember I was to slow down, to make sure that you say the full name correctly, you don't cut it short. So it was being monitored.
But by that stage you would have sort of learnt a lot anyway, wouldn't you? And you'd have been mentored by other... Was it very collegial? Broadcasters?
Yes, you were. Where I was in Palmerston North at Radio 2ZA, it was initially, there was always someone to mentor you. It could be initially your operator, who was a skilled broadcaster, or a technician.
So when you say your operator,
yes.
So how does it work? You were the broadcaster.
Yes, I was the one who spoke.
So it was very complex. Were you called a broadcaster or a reporter, or what was the term?
I started off very, very initially as a reporter, and then quickly with radio back in the 70s, I got promoted or invited into the studio.
Okay.
To work in the studio. Now, that was in the days of horse racing, which was very, very big business, and it guaranteed you, if you had the horse racing, it guaranteed that you had the biggest listenership, that you could never do it on your own, because, so there was a technician, and each horse racing commentator had a technician.
Yes.
And then I also had an operator on the other side of the desk from me who was putting all that together to tell me, you know, what was next.
So were you one of the people sort of saying, this horse is in front and here's another one coming up behind?
The operator played a very, very key role.
Yes.
And really effectively putting the program together. I could hear, there was both male and female. I could hear them in my ear telling me what is coming up. You're looking at the clock.
Yeah.
Of course, all the clocks are synchronized.
Yeah.
So you're monitoring the clock all the time and counting down. So there's no overlaps of what's happening or... There's no...
So what's actually going on? Is it you're giving comment between bits of music, or it's a non-stop program you're talking right through?
Very little music.
So you were talking right through, or there was...
Yes, talking right through, and then we would go live to a racetrack somewhere in New Zealand.
Yeah.
And I could hear in the background that they're almost ready to go. You didn't go there 5 minutes before the race.
Yeah.
You're counting it down, and then now we'll go live to Addington.
Ah, so then there's someone there who's narrating the race.
The technician in Addington would tap the commentator.
Okay.
And he'd be away.
Ah, so you're doing all the connecting stuff and background details.
Yes.
So would you have had a big script or background information, or you just used your own chatter?
No, you just had a list of what was on, what racing was on, because that was the big anchor.
Yeah.
You know, that program went from noon, 12 o'clock, through to 6 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
And there would be multiple race meetings throughout the country.
Yeah.
And you could get a meeting that's running a little bit late.
Yeah.
And there could be overlaps.
Yeah.
So then you had to decide which one, if it's a major race, it took precedence over a lesser race.
Yeah.
So you had to make that decision which you're going to go to, and then you would tell your audience that the race from Matamata will follow And then immediately you took that major race, the phones would be ringing. I didn't have to answer that.
Yeah.
Someone saying, why are you taking this race?
Yeah.
You're never going to win. It was a delicate balance. Yeah. And it was the same. And then you waited for the dividends because you went to the TAB for the dividends.
Yeah.
And you had to cross there and the people could not wait. They're on the phone.
These are all the
where are you paying? Why aren't we getting the dividends?
About their bets.
Yeah, they want to know where their money went.
Yeah, so they're not interested in the horses and racing and so on. Just did they win?
No, so it was it was a juggling act.
Yes.
You know.
So then if there was an overlap, you'd play a recording of the other race?
Yes, it would be recorded.
Okay.
And that's what the technician did.
Yeah.
He recorded it and we knew that he had it.
Yeah.
And then there might be ads to play.
Yeah.
And then suddenly we can, let's go to race six from Matamata.
Okay. So in your early days then, did you find your feet very quickly? You just took it and thought, oh, this is for me? Or was there a lot to learn?
In the early days, it was very straightforward relatively straightforward because you had an operator who was putting the program together for you.
Oh, yeah.
So all you were doing, and then you had a technician looking after the technical side, and so you were only doing the link part, the speaking part.
Yeah, yeah.
But 6 hours is
is
a long time.
Yes.
You had to be very, very focused.
Yeah, yeah.
And it wasn't only racing, it could be rugby commentaries, rugby reports, it could be cricket, it could be other sports, and there could be interviews thrown in there. So it was always an interesting mix, but always a challenge.
So you'd have sort of a 6 hour shift without a break?
6 hour shift, no breaks.
Okay.
Got a coffee.
That's true, yeah.
A couple of times?
Yeah.
There was the technician's other job.
Okay, yeah. So, and this was basically a Saturday job, was it?
Yes, Saturday, every Saturday afternoon, and I did that for nearly 20 years on there, and then from there, radio changed tremendously because Radio New Zealand lost the horse racing.
Okay.
In that period. Now, that was... it was a big loss with you talk listenership that allowed us to cover more local sport.
Yeah.
So...
So this was from what, about 95?
That would be... the change would have come probably in the late 80s.
Okay, yeah.
But again, at that time, the cell phones... There was no cell phone.
Yes.
So reporters in the field who were volunteers, they would scribble down their notes and then go maybe to a petrol station to use the phone or a house or anywhere at all to use a phone. Okay. And we would, in the studio, cross to them and they would give their report.
Okay, yeah.
So those people, they were not paid.
Yeah.
They were volunteers. They just loved their particular sport. And it did work very, very well.
Okay. Now, so you say you could broaden it more local sport. Was there a range of sport that you covered?
There was the rugby. There was the football. Or the soccer to some people. Yeah. There was... cricket, of course.
Cricket,
Or if they were the three main ones.
Yeah.
Okay. And then there could be, if there's a championship like tennis or something of that nature, you would cover that as well.
Swimming, netball, athletics?
Not a lot of swimming and not a lot of athletics.
Okay. Yeah. And it was mainly, now there's a lot of talk about women's sport and so on. Was there much interest in it, or was there a lot of women's sport in
no,
those early days?
Not like now. The first the major change from that first part of my career happened in 1995, it was, when with the changes that had happened in broadcasting, that I created a program called Sports Extra on Tuesday, as it was then, and that went through to 2040, and that was a Saturday morning. As a local program, and it went, it was live from 7 in the morning until 9 o'clock.
Is that all the schools, sport, and say which cancellations there were and so on?
Yes, yeah, okay. Cancellations, of course, were very important.
Yeah, that, absolutely. Very, very good point. I remember that.
Yeah, very, very important cancellations, postponement.
Yeah.
And very precise times, like it followed the news.
Yes.
It also was at 8:30 repeat.
Yes.
Yes, and people were waiting at those times. They knew postponements or cancellations would be on at 8:05 or 7:05, 7:30, 8:30. So, because it belonged to the community, radio, and it's the first point of contact with the community because it's immediate.
That's right. I know. You got, if you've got children in a team, it won't be in the newspaper.
And so that Sports Extra program, was completely local.
So you were doing that in the morning, and then another program in the afternoon.
No,
or you switched over to the morning
because they went into network.
Oh, okay.
In the afternoon, you know, after that.
Yeah. Okay.
And it was the same with all the provincial stations around the country that you went back into the national program. So with that Sports Extra, it gave the opportunity to promote a lot of local sports because you would have three, it could be four, people every half hour. You're normally three because you've got to put in commercial breaks. So it would be usually six an hour. So you're covering 12, it could be 12 sports in that time.
So is that, you mean you're reporting on games or you're interviewing people from different
You are previewing what's on that day or that weekend. So there's a lot of planning in it. And these were all people associated with their specific sport. And they, some of course were naturals, others struggled a little bit. But it was a very, very important way of exposing sport to the local people.
Now I'm thinking two things. One, there'd be a lot of, there'd be school sport, and then there's the other, I suppose, the clubs and so on. Was that clear?
Yes, there was nothing, no such thing as a minor sport.
Yes.
And if it was worthy of being on air, talking about it, it was the best way to promote it. And whilst some sports are very, very popular, others may be not, but it's a matter of personal preference. And that's the public's choice. But I was very, very open-minded, and if I could see a reason, any reason for promoting it, like there was roller derbies was one. That no one had ever heard of, but when it started getting exposure, it became very, very popular.
So, and was there a, I suppose you had your own choice as to what to cover, so
you did your homework
promoting the minor sport.
You did your own homework. You spoke to the people when you're doing your preparation. And you would seek their advice. What should I ask you?
Were they, were people chasing you wanting coverage of their sports as well?
That they could realise, they realised the benefit of it.
Yeah.
and okay. then you'd have to make the decision, yes or no. There were occasions, many occasions, when you had to make the decision to drop them for a week.
Yeah.
Or maybe 2 weeks, because of it. You've got to prioritise
yes.
what you have.
Yeah.
And then you'd have the availability
yeah.
of people, not necessarily in the region, that you want to talk to in an interview on air for a specific reason.
Yeah, okay. So, now, you would have gone through this from the time when there was the old traditional Kiwi weekend to the time when that disappeared, which actually had a big effect on
sports. Yes, okay. yeah.
So, was that something that came through in your work that you could observe with that?
Yes, it did. Because the times changed, and then there were traditional playing hours,
yeah.
Like in the summer, the cricket.
Yeah.
And we would, in cricket, you'd get your last report from a ground, and fortunately in Palmerston North, their matches were very generally very close together.
Yeah.
Like you had Manurah Park.
Yeah.
And a number of senior matches would be played there. So that, let's call them our reporter, didn't have to go very far
yeah.
to get all okay. the scores and down the road to the BP service station.
Yeah, okay.
Us to use their phone
yeah.
and get the report. So the matches went through to six, and of course daylight saving came in later, and they went on later.
Yeah.
But we were out of the program at 6 o'clock. Internet yeah. work, so we had no say from that.
All right, okay, yeah. But with things like so many more people working at weekends, did that affect the... Because I had the... Coming from overseas, I had the impression in New Zealand there was great emphasis on the weekend where most of the shops were closed, it was open for sport and activity, parents could be coaching teams and so on, and suddenly a lot of that was lost. Is that
yes,
something?
Yes, it was. It started with Saturday shopping.
Yeah.
And then it went to 7 day a week shopping. So that had a huge influence on sport.
Yeah.
It could have been on religious grounds.
Yeah.
Some people would not play on a Sunday.
That's right.
Yeah. And you honoured that.
Yeah.
So you had to tread quite carefully at times.
Yeah, yeah. Did this mean that there was less sport activities, say, in the 90s than there was in the 70s?
I don't think it changed a lot. I think over that time, if you go back to the 70s and go through the 90s, there were so many more sports yeah. options
yeah.
for people. Mm-hmm. And even at high school level,
yes.
where what was cricket and rugby and the girls had netball,
yeah.
suddenly they had all sports came in the curriculum.
Yeah. Do you have an understanding as to what brought that about? Why it changed?
No, I don't know if there's any specific reason. I think in the case of schools, it would be the rector at high schools who could influence that. There's a sort of a new generation came through. They broke away from tradition of rugby, cricket.
Yeah.
And if you didn't like rugby or cricket, it was cricket and rugby.
Yeah.
And if you're in the first 11 or first 15, you were treated a bit like gods.
Yeah.
Because you were the ultimate achiever at some high schools. Sport was a big influence in secondary schools.
Yeah.
Or could be.
And it was mainly young people, so that I'm just thinking things like golf and bowls and so on. That used to be a large number of outdoor bowls clubs in New Zealand, and with older people participating in that, but that was just more sort of hobby sort of thing rather than for coverage
You've got bowls we covered
regularly
And because I not only did work in the studio, but I was a field reporter for Radio New Zealand Sport. And, you know, I've covered national championships.
Okay.
In bowls, you know, as a commentator. You know, very, very popular.
Yeah. Okay. And golf, was that popular as
golf,
well?
Golf, we covered... it more reported on golf, because you can't follow rounds. But if there's we in the Manawatu, we had the Lawnmaster Classic, which was the biggest golf tournament here. And we did very long preview, because we had that opportunity to, in the case of the Lawnmaster, that we could go to the Manawatu Golf Club, where it was held, talk to Andre White, the professional top players from around the country who were there. So that could well mean that three quarters of the program was coming out of the Manawatu Golf Club. But they were the exceptions rather than the rule.
This is part one of two. Listen next week for part two.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.